purposes is a lesser practical detail that has to be left for civilizations billions of years in the future that are facing the big freeze. According to Astronomer Royal Sir Martin Rees, wormholes, extra dimensions, and quantum computers open up speculative scenarios that could transform our entire universe eventually into a living cosmos. Type 1, 2, and 3 civilizations. To understand the technology of civilizations thousands to millions of years ahead of ours, physicists sometimes classify civilizations depending on their consumption of energy and the laws of thermodynamics. When scanning the heavens for signs of intelligent life, physicists do not look for little green men, but for civilizations with the energy output of type 1, 2, and 3 civilizations. The ranking was introduced by Russian physicist Nikolai Kardashev in the 1960s. For classifying the radio signals from possible civilizations in outer space. Each civilization type emits a characteristic form of radiation that can be measured and cataloged. Even an advanced civilization that tries to conceal its presence can be detected by our instruments. By the second law of thermodynamics, any advanced civilization will create entropy in the form of waste heat that will inevitably drift into outer space. Even if they try to mask their presence, it is impossible to hide the faint glow created by their entropy. A Type 1 civilization is one that has harnessed planetary forms of energy. Their energy consumption can be precisely measured. By definition, they are able to utilize the entire amount of solar energy striking their planet, or 10 to the 16th power watts. With this planetary energy, they might control or modify the weather, change the course of hurricanes, or build cities on the ocean. Such civilizations are truly masters of their planet and have created a planetary civilization. A Type 2 civilization has exhausted the power of a single planet and has harnessed the power of an entire star, or approximately 10 to the 26th power watts. They are able to consume the entire energy output of their star and might conceivably control solar flares and ignite other stars. A Type 3 civilization has exhausted the power of a single solar system and has colonized large portions of its home galaxy. Such a civilization is able to utilize the energy from 10 billion stars, or approximately 10 to the 36th power watts. Each type of civilization differs from the next lower type by a factor of 10 billion. Hence, a Type 3 civilization, harnessing the power of billions of star systems, can use 10 billion times the energy output of a Type 2 civilization, which in turn harnesses 10 billion times the output of a Type 1 civilization. Although the gap separating these civilizations may seem astronomical, it is possible to estimate the time it might take to achieve a Type 3 civilization. Assume that a civilization grows at a modest rate of 2 to 3% in its energy output per year. This is a plausible assumption, since economic growth, which can be reasonably calculated, is directly related to energy consumption. The larger the economy, the greater its energy demands. Since the growth of the gross domestic product, or GDP, of many nations lies within 1 to 2% per year, we can expect its energy consumption to grow at roughly the same rate. At this modest rate, we can estimate that our current civilization is approximately 100 to 200 years from attaining Type 1 status. It will take us roughly 1,000 to 5,000 years to achieve Type 2 status, and perhaps 100,000 to 1 million years to achieve Type 3 status. On such a scale, our civilization today may be classified as a Type 0 civilization, because we obtain our energy from dead plants, oil, and coal. Even controlling a hurricane, which can unleash the power of hundreds of nuclear weapons, is beyond our technology. To describe our present-day civilization, astronomer Carl Sagan advocated creating finer gradations between the civilization types. Type 1, two, and three civilizations we have seen generate a total energy output of roughly 10 to the 16th power, 10 to the 26th power, and 10 to the 36th power watts, respectively. Sagan introduced a type 1.1 civilization, for example, which generates 10 to the 17th power watts of power. A type 1.2 civilization, which generates 10 to the 18th power watts of power, and so on. By dividing each type 1 into 10 smaller subtypes, we can begin to classify our own civilization. On this scale, our present civilization is more like a type 0.7 civilization, within striking distance of being truly planetary. A type 0.7 civilization is still 1,000 times smaller than a type 1 in terms of energy production. Although our civilization is still quite primitive, we already see signs of a transition taking place. When I gaze at the headlines, I constantly see reminders of this historic evolution. In fact, I feel privileged to be alive to witness it. The Internet is an emerging Type 1 telephone system. It has the capability of becoming the basis of a universal planetary communication network. The economy of the Type 1 society will be dominated not by nations, but by large trading blocs resembling the European Union, which itself was formed because of competition from NAFTA, the countries of North America. The language of our Type 1 society will probably be English, which is already the dominant second language on Earth. In many third world countries today, the upper classes and college educated tend to speak both English and the local language. The entire population of a Type 1 civilization may be bilingual in this fashion, speaking both a local language and a planetary language. Nations, although they will probably exist in some form for centuries to come, will become less important as trade barriers fall and as the world becomes more economically interdependent. Modern nations, in part, were originally carved out by capitalists and those who wanted a uniform currency, borders, taxes, and laws with which to conduct business. As business itself becomes more international, national borders should become less relevant. No single nation is powerful enough to stop this march to a Type 1 civilization. Wars will probably always be with us, but the nature of war will change with the emergence of a planetary middle class, more interested in tourism and the accumulation of wealth and resources than in overpowering other peoples and controlling markets or geographical regions. Pollution will increasingly be tackled on a planetary scale. Greenhouse gases, acid rain, burning rainforests, and such respect no national boundaries, and there will be pressure from neighboring nations for offending entities to clean up their act. Global environmental problems will help to accelerate global solutions. As resources, such as fish harvests, grain harvests, water resources, gradually flatten out due to overcultivation and overconsumption, there will be increased pressure to manage our resources on a global scale or else face famine and collapse. Information will be almost free, encouraging society to be much more democratic, allowing the disenfranchised to gain a new voice and putting pressure on dictatorships. These forces are beyond the control of any single individual or nation. The Internet cannot be outlawed. In fact, any such move would be met more with laughter than with horror, because the Internet is the road to economic prosperity and science, as well as culture and entertainment. But the transition from Type 0 to Type 1 is also the most perilous, because we still demonstrate the savagery that typified our rise from the forest. In some sense, the advancement of our civilization is a race against time. On one hand, the march toward a Type 1 planetary civilization may promise us an era of unparalleled peace and prosperity. On the other hand, the forces of entropy, the greenhouse effect, pollution, nuclear war, fundamentalism, disease, may yet tear us apart. Sir Martin Rees sees these threats, as well as those due to terrorism, bioengineered germs, and other technological nightmares, as some of the greatest challenges facing humanity. It is sobering that he gives us only a 50-50 chance of successfully negotiating this challenge. This may be one of the reasons we don't see extraterrestrial civilizations in space. If they indeed exist, perhaps they are so advanced that they see little interest in our primitive Type 0.7 society. Alternatively, perhaps they were devoured by war or killed off by their own pollution as they strived to reach Type 1 status. In this sense, the generation now alive may be one of the most important generations ever to walk the surface of the Earth. It may well decide if we safely make the transition to a Type 1 civilization. But as Friedrich Nietzsche once said, what does not kill us makes us stronger. Our painful transition from Type 0 to Type 1 will surely be a trial by fire, with a number of harrowing close calls. If we can emerge from this challenge successfully, we will be stronger, in the same way that hammering molten steel serves to temper it. Type 1 Civilization. When a civilization reaches Type 1 status, it is unlikely to immediately reach for the stars. It is more likely to stay on the home planet for centuries, long enough to resolve the remaining nationalistic, fundamentalist, racial, and sectarian passions of its past. Science fiction writers frequently underestimate the difficulty of space travel and space colonization. Today, it costs $10,000 to $40,000 per pound to put anything into near-Earth orbit. Imagine John Glenn made out of solid gold, and you begin to appreciate the steep cost of space travel. Each space shuttle mission costs upwards of $800 million, if we take the total cost for the space shuttle program and divide by the number of missions. It is likely that the cost of space travel will go down, but only by a factor of 10 in the next several decades, with the arrival of reusable launch vehicles, RLVs, which can be reused immediately after a mission is complete. Through most of the 21st century, space travel will remain a prohibitively expensive proposition, except for the wealthiest individuals and nations. There is one possible exception to this: the development of space elevators. Recent advances in nanotechnology make possible the production of threads made of super-strong and super-lightweight carbon nanotubes. In principle, it is possible that these threads of carbon atoms could prove strong enough to connect Earth with a geosynchronous satellite orbiting more than 20,000 miles above Earth. Like Jack and the Beanstalk, we might be able to ascend this carbon nanotube to reach outer space for a fraction of the usual cost. Historically, space scientists dismissed space elevators because the tension on the string would be enough to break any known fiber. However, carbon nanotube technology may change this. NASA is funding preliminary studies on this technology, and the situation will be closely analyzed over the years. But should such a technology prove possible, a space elevator could at best only take us into orbit around Earth, not to the other planets. The dream of space colonies must be tempered by the fact that the cost of manned missions to the moon and the planets is many times the cost of near-Earth missions. Unlike the Earth-bound voyages of Columbus and the early Spanish explorers centuries ago, where the cost of a ship was a tiny fraction of the gross domestic product of Spain and where the potential economic rewards were huge, the establishment of colonies on the Moon and Mars would bankrupt most nations while conferring almost no direct economic benefits. A simple manned mission to Mars could cost anywhere from $100 billion to $500 billion, with little to show for it financially in return. Similarly, one also has to consider the danger to the human passengers. After half a century of experience with liquid-fueled rockets, the chances of a catastrophic failure involving rocket missions are about 1 in 70. In fact, the two tragic losses of the space shuttle fall within this ratio. space travel, we often forget, is different from tourism. With so much volatile fuel and so many hostile threats to human life, space travel will continue to be a risky proposition for decades to come. On a scale of several centuries, however, the situation may gradually change. As the cost of space travel continues its slow decline, a few space colonies may gradually take hold on Mars. On this time scale, some scientists have even proposed ingenious mechanisms to terraform Mars, such as deflecting a comet and letting it vaporize in the atmosphere, thereby adding water vapor to the atmosphere. Others have advocated injecting methane gas into the atmosphere to create an artificial greenhouse effect on the red planet, raising temperatures and gradually melting the permafrost under the surface of Mars, thereby filling its lakes and streams for the first time in billions of years. Some have proposed more extreme, dangerous measures, such as detonating an underground nuclear warhead beneath the ice caps to melt the ice, which could pose a health hazard for space colonists of the future. But these suggestions are still wildly speculative. More likely, a Type 1 civilization will find space colonies a distant priority in the next few centuries. But for long-distance interplanetary missions, where time is not so pressing, the development of a solar ion engine may offer a new form of propulsion between the stars. Such slow-moving engines would generate little thrust, but they can maintain that thrust for years at a time. These engines concentrate solar energy from the sun, heat up a gas like cesium, and then hurl the gas out the exhaust, giving a mild thrust that can be maintained almost indefinitely. Vehicles powered by such engines might be ideal for creating an interplanetary interstate highway system connecting the planets. Eventually, Type 1 civilizations might send a few experimental probes to nearby stars. Since the speed of chemical rockets is ultimately limited by the maximum speed of the gases in the rocket exhaust, physicists will have to find more exotic forms of propulsion if they hope to reach distances that are hundreds of light years away. One possible design would be to create a fusion ramjet, a rocket that scoops hydrogen from interstellar space and fuses it, releasing unlimited amounts of energy in the process. However, proton-proton fusion is quite difficult to attain even on Earth, let alone in outer space in a starship. Such technology is at best another century in the future. Type 2 Civilization. A Type 2 civilization able to harness the power of an entire star might resemble a version of the Federation of Planets in the Star Trek series, without the warp drive. They have colonized a tiny fraction of the Milky Way galaxy and can ignite stars, and hence they qualify for an emerging Type 2 status. To fully utilize the output of the sun, physicist Freeman Dyson has speculated that a Type 2 civilization might build a gigantic sphere around the sun to absorb its rays. This civilization might, for example, be able to deconstruct a planet the size of Jupiter and distribute the mass in a sphere around the sun. Because of the second law of thermodynamics, the sphere would eventually heat up, giving off a characteristic infrared radiation that could be seen from outer space. Jun Jugaku of the Research Institute of Civilization in Japan and his colleagues have searched the heavens out to 80 light-years to try to locate other such civilizations and have found no evidence of these infrared emissions, although remember that our galaxy is 100,000 light-years across. A Type 2 civilization might colonize some of the planets in their solar system and even embark upon a program to develop interstellar travel. Because of the vast resources available to a Type 2 civilization, they potentially might have developed such exotic forms of propulsion as an antimatter-matter drive for their starships, making possible travel near the speed of light. In principle, this form of energy is 100% energy efficient. It is also experimentally possible, but prohibitively expensive by Type 1 standards. It takes an atom smasher to create beams of antiprotons that can be used to create antiatoms. We can only speculate about how a Type 2 society might function. However, it will have millennia to sort out disputes over property, resources, and power. A Type 2 civilization could potentially be immortal. It is likely that nothing known to science could destroy such a civilization, except perhaps the folly of the inhabitants themselves. Comets and meteors could be deflected. Ice ages could be diverted by changing the weather patterns. Even the threat posed by a nearby supernova explosion could be avoided simply by abandoning the home planet and transporting the civilization out of harm's way, or even potentially by tampering with the thermonuclear engine of the dying star itself. Type 3 Civilization. By the time a society reaches the level of a Type 3 civilization, it may begin to contemplate the fantastic energies at which space and time become unstable. We recall that the Planck energy is the energy at which quantum effects dominate, and space-time becomes foamy with tiny bubbles and wormholes. The Planck energy is well beyond our reach today, but that is only because we judge energy from the point of view of a Type 0.7 civilization. By the time a civilization has reached Type 3 status, it will have access, by definition, to energies 10 billion times 10 billion, or 10 to the 20th power, those found on Earth today. Astronomer Ian Crawford of the University College in London writes about Type 3 civilizations. Assuming a typical colony spacing of 10 light-years, a ship speed of 10% that of light, and a period of 400 years between the foundation of a colony and its sending out colonies of its own, the colonization wavefront will expand at an average speed of 0.02 light-year a year. As the galaxy is 100,000 light-years across, it takes no more than about 5 million years to colonize it completely. Though a long time in human terms, this is only 0.05% of the age of the galaxy. Scientists have made serious attempts to detect radio emissions from a Type 3 civilization within our own galaxy. The giant Arecibo radio telescope in Puerto Rico has scanned much of the galaxy for radio emissions at 1.42 gigahertz, near the emission line of hydrogen gas. It has found no evidence of any radio emissions in that band from any civilization radiating between 10 to the 18th power to 10 to the 30th power watts of power, that is, from type 1.2 to type 2.4. However, this does not rule out civilizations that are just beyond us in technology, from type 0.8 to type 1.1, or considerably ahead of us, such as type 2.5 and beyond. It also does not rule out other forms of communication. An advanced civilization, for example, might send signals by laser rather than radio. And if they use radio, they may use frequencies other than 1.42 gigahertz. For example, they might spread their signal out across many frequencies and then reassemble them at the receiving end. This way, a passing star or cosmic storm would not interfere with the entire message. Anyone listening in on this spread signal may hear only gibberish. Our own emails are broken up into many pieces, with each piece sent through a different city, and then reassembled at the end for your PC. Similarly, advanced civilizations may decide to use sophisticated methods to break down a signal and reassemble it at the other end. If a Type 3 civilization exists in the universe, then one of their most pressing concerns would be establishing a communication system connecting the galaxy. This, of course, depends on whether they can somehow master faster-than-light technology, such as via wormholes. If we assume that they cannot, then their growth will be stunted considerably. Physicist Freeman Dyson, quoting from the work of Jean-Marc Lévy-Leblond, speculates that such a society may live in a Carroll universe, named after Lewis Carroll. In the past, Dyson writes, human society was based on small tribes in which space was absolute, but time was relative. This meant that communication between scattered tribes was impossible, and we could only venture a short distance from our birthplace within a human lifetime. Each tribe was separated by the vastness of absolute space. With the coming of the Industrial Revolution, we entered the Newtonian universe, in which space and time became absolute, and we had ships and wheels that linked the scattered tribes into nations. In the 20th century, we entered the Einsteinian universe, in which space and time were both relative, and we developed the telegraph, telephone, radio, and TV, resulting in instantaneous communication. A Type 3 civilization may drift back to a Carroll universe once again, with pockets of space colonies separated by vast interstellar distances, unable to communicate because of the light barrier. To prevent the fragmentation of such a Carroll universe, a Type 3 civilization might need to develop wormholes that allow for faster-than-light communication at the subatomic level. Type 4 Civilization. Once I was giving a talk at the London Planetarium, and a little boy of 10 came up to me and insisted that there must be a Type 4 civilization. When I reminded him that there are only planets, stars, and galaxies, and that these are the only platforms that allow for the germination of intelligent life, he claimed that a Type 4 civilization could utilize the power of the continuum. He was right, I realized. If a Type 4 civilization could exist, its energy source might be extragalactic, such as the dark energy we see around us, which makes up 73% of the matter-energy content of the universe. Although potentially an enormous reservoir of energy, by far the largest in the universe, this anti-gravity field is spread out over the vast, empty reaches of the universe and is hence extremely weak at any point in space. Nikola Tesla, the genius of electricity and rival to Thomas Edison, wrote extensively about harvesting the energy of the vacuum. He believed that the vacuum hid untold reservoirs of energy. If we could somehow tap into this source, it would revolutionize all of human society, he thought. However, extracting this fabulous energy would be extremely difficult. Think of searching for gold in the oceans. There is probably more gold dispersed in the oceans than all the gold at Fort Knox and the other treasuries of the world. However, the expense of extracting this gold over such a large area is prohibitive. Hence, the gold lying in the oceans has never been harvested. Likewise, the energy hidden within dark energy exceeds the entire energy content of the stars and galaxies. However, it is spread out over billions of light years and would be difficult to concentrate. But by the laws of physics, it is still conceivable that an advanced Type 3 civilization, having exhausted the power of the stars in the galaxy, may somehow try to tap into this energy to make the transition to Type 4. Information Classification. Further refinements to the classification of civilizations can be made based on new technologies. Kardashev wrote down the original classification in the 1960s, before the explosion in computer miniaturization, advances in nanotechnology, and awareness of the problems of environmental degradation. In light of these developments, an advanced civilization might progress in a slightly different fashion, taking full advantage of the information revolution we are witnessing today. As an advanced civilization develops exponentially, the copious production of waste heat could dangerously raise the temperature of the atmosphere of the planet and pose climactic problems. Colonies of bacteria grow exponentially in a petri dish until they exhaust the food supply and literally drown in their own waste. Similarly, because space travel will remain prohibitively expensive for centuries, and terraforming nearby planets if possible, will be such an economic and scientific challenge, an evolving Type 1 civilization could potentially suffocate in its own waste heat, or it could miniaturize and streamline its information production. To see the effectiveness of such miniaturization, consider the human brain, which contains about 100 billion neurons, as many as there are galaxies in the visible universe, yet produces almost no heat. By rights, if a computer engineer today were to design an electronic computer capable of computing quadrillions of bytes per second, as the brain can apparently do effortlessly, it would probably be several square blocks in size and would require a reservoir of water to cool it down. Yet our brains can contemplate the most sublime thoughts without working up a sweat. The brain accomplishes this because of its molecular and cellular architecture. First of all, it is not a computer at all, in the sense of being a standard Turing machine with input tape, output tape, and central processor. The brain has no operating system, no Windows, no CPU, no Pentium chip that we commonly associate with computers. Instead, it is a highly efficient neural network, a learning machine where memory and thought patterns are distributed throughout the brain rather than concentrated in a central processing unit. The brain does not even compute very quickly because the electrical messages sent down neurons are chemical in nature. But it more than makes up for this slowness because it can execute parallel processing and can learn new tasks at astronomically fast speeds. To improve on the crude efficiency of electronic computers, scientists are trying to use novel ideas, many taken from nature, to create the next generation of miniaturized computers. Already, scientists at Princeton have been able to compute on DNA molecules, treating DNA as a piece of computer tape, based not on binary zeros and ones, but on the four nucleic acids, A, T, C, G. Their DNA computer solved the traveling salesman problem for several cities, that is, calculate the shortest route connecting N cities. Similarly, molecular transistors have been created in the laboratory, and even the first primitive quantum computers, which can compute on individual atoms, have been constructed. Given the advances in nanotechnology, it is conceivable that an advanced civilization will find much more efficient ways to develop, rather than to create copious quantities of waste heat that threaten their existence. Types A to Z. Sagan introduced yet another way of ranking advanced civilizations according to their information content, which would be essential to any civilization contemplating leaving the universe. A Type A civilization, for example, is one that processes 10 to the 6th power bits of information. This would correspond to a primitive civilization without a written language, but with a spoken language. To understand how much information is contained within a Type A civilization, Sagan used the example of the game 20 Questions, where you are supposed to identify a mysterious object by asking no more than 20 questions that can be answered by a yes or a no. One strategy is to ask questions that divide the world into two large pieces, such as, is it living? After asking 20 such questions, we have divided the world into 2 to the 20th power pieces, or 10 to the 6th power pieces, which is the total information content of a Type A civilization. Once a written language is discovered, the total information content rapidly explodes. Physicist Philip Morrison of MIT estimates that the total written heritage that survived from ancient Greece is about 10 to the 9th power bits, or a Type C civilization by Sagan's ranking. Sagan estimated our present-day information content. By estimating the number of books contained in all the libraries of the world, measured in the tens of millions, and the number of pages there are on each book, he came up with about 10 to the 13th power bits of information. If we include photographs, this might rise to 10 to the 15th power bits. This would place us as a Type H civilization. Given our low energy and information output, we can be classified as a Type 0.7 H civilization. He estimated that our first contact with an extraterrestrial civilization would involve a civilization of at least type 1.5 J or 1.8 K, because they have already mastered the dynamics of interstellar travel. At the minimum, such a civilization would be several centuries to millennia more advanced than ours. Similarly, a galactic Type 3 civilization may be typified by the information content of each planet multiplied by the number of planets in the galaxy capable of supporting life. Sagan estimated that such a Type 3 civilization would be Type Q, an advanced civilization that can harness the information content of a billion galaxies, representing a large portion of the visible universe, would qualify the civilization as Type Z, he estimated. This is not a trivial academic exercise. Any civilization about to leave the universe will necessarily have to compute the conditions on the other side of the universe. Einstein's equations are notoriously difficult because, to calculate the curvature of space at any point, you have to know the location of all objects in the universe, each of which contributes to the bending of space. You also have to know the quantum corrections to the black hole, which at present are impossible to calculate. Since this is vastly too difficult for our computers, today physicists usually approximate a black hole by studying a universe dominated by a single collapsed star. To arrive at a more realistic understanding of the dynamics within the event horizon of a black hole or near the mouth of a wormhole, we necessarily have to know the location and energy content of all the nearby stars and compute quantum fluctuations. Again, this is prohibitively difficult. It is hard enough to solve the equations for a single star in an empty universe, let alone billions of galaxies floating in an inflated universe. That is why any civilization that attempts to make the journey through a wormhole would have to have computational power far beyond that available to a Type 0.7H civilization like ours. Perhaps the minimum civilization with the energy and information content to seriously consider making the jump would be a Type 3Q. It is also conceivable that intelligence may spread beyond the confines of the Kardashev classification. As Sir Martin Rees says, "It's quite conceivable that even if life now exists only here on Earth, it will eventually spread through the galaxy and beyond. So life may not forever be an unimportant trace contaminant of the universe, even though it now is. In fact, I find it a rather appealing view, and I think it could be salutary if it became widely shared. But he warns us, if we snuffed ourselves out, we'd be destroying genuine cosmic potentialities. So, even if one believes that life is unique to the Earth now, then that doesn't mean that life is forever going to be a trivial piece of the universe." How would an advanced civilization contemplate leaving their dying universe? It would have to overcome a series of large obstacles. Step 1. Create and test a theory of everything. The first hurdle for a civilization hoping to leave the universe would be to complete a theory of everything. Whether it is string theory or not, we must have a way to reliably calculate quantum corrections to Einstein's equations, or else none of our theories are useful. Fortunately, because M-theory is rapidly advancing, with some of the best minds on the planet working on this question, we shall know if it is truly the theory of everything or a theory of nothing fairly rapidly, within a few decades or possibly less. Once a theory of everything, or a theory of quantum gravity, has been found, we have to verify the consequences of this theory using advanced technology. Several possibilities exist, including building large atom smashers to create superparticles, or even huge gravity wave detectors based in space or on different moons throughout the solar system. Moons are quite stable for long periods of time, free of erosion and atmospheric disturbances, so a planetary system of gravity wave detectors should be able to probe the details of the Big Bang, resolving any questions we may have about quantum gravity and creating a new universe. Once a theory of quantum gravity is found, and huge atom smashers and gravity wave detectors have confirmed its correctness, then we can begin to answer some essential questions concerning Einstein's equations and wormholes. 1. Are wormholes stable? When passing through a Kerr-rotating black hole, the problem is that your very presence disturbs the black hole. It may collapse before you make a complete passage through the Einstein-Rosen bridge. This stability calculation has to be redone in light of quantum corrections, which may change the calculation entirely. 2. Are there divergences? If we pass through a transversible wormhole connecting two time eras, then the buildup of radiation surrounding the wormhole entrance may become infinite, which would be disastrous. This is because radiation can pass through the wormhole, go back in time, and return after many years to enter the wormhole a second time. This process can be repeated an infinite number of times, leading to an infinite buildup of radiation. This problem can be solved, however, if the many worlds theory holds, so that the universe splits every time radiation passes through the wormhole, and there is no infinite buildup of radiation. We need a theory of everything to settle this delicate question. 3. Can we find large quantities of negative energy? Negative energy, a key ingredient that can open up and stabilize wormholes, is already known to exist, but only in small quantities. Can we find sufficient quantities of it to open and stabilize a wormhole? Assuming that the answers to these questions can be found, then an advanced civilization may begin to seriously contemplate how to leave the universe or face certain extinction. Several alternatives exist. Step 2. Find naturally occurring wormholes and white holes. Wormholes, dimensional gateways, and cosmic strings may exist naturally in outer space. At the instant of the Big Bang, when there was a huge amount of energy released into the universe, wormholes and cosmic strings may have formed naturally. The inflation of the early universe might then have expanded these wormholes to macroscopic size. In addition, there is the possibility that exotic matter or negative matter exists naturally in outer space. This would help enormously in any effort to leave a dying universe. However, there is no guarantee that such objects exist in nature. No one has ever seen any of these objects, and it is simply too risky to bet the fate of all intelligent life on this assumption. Next, there is the possibility that white holes may be found by scanning the heavens. A white hole is a solution of Einstein's equations in which time is reversed, so that objects are ejected from a white hole in the same way that objects are sucked into a black hole. A white hole might be found at the other end of a black hole, so that matter entering a black hole eventually comes out the white hole. So far, all astronomical searches have found no evidence of white holes, but their existence might be confirmed or disproved with the next generation of space-based detectors. Step 3. Send probes through a black hole. There are decided advantages to using such black holes as wormholes. Black holes, as we have come to discover, are quite plentiful in the universe. If one can solve the numerous technical problems, they will have to be seriously considered by any advanced civilization as an escape hatch from our universe. Also, in passing through a black hole, we are not bound by the limitation that we cannot go backward in time to a time before the creation of the time machine. The wormhole in the center of the Kerr ring may connect our universe to quite different universes or different points in the same universe. The only way to tell would be to experiment with probes and use a supercomputer to calculate the distribution of masses in the universes and calculate quantum